Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments or questions during this broadcast, feel free to write to me at bonkay@aol.com, that's bonkaye@aol.com, or in the future, if you're listening to this broadcast, please write to me if you have any questions you'd like for my guest for tonight. Before I introduce him, I did want to mention that our healing weekend is coming up in just a few months in April in California. It's going to be our best one to date as far as the guest speakers and the workshops that we're having, to really putting people on the road to healing, which is so important while you're going through this whole mess till your life straightens out. There's so many complications that our women have that other marriages don't have that come out after, you know, the fallout of these marriages. So we're going to have some wonderful healing workshops, some really amazing guests that you've heard on this radio show before, new guests that will really help you on your way. If you would like some information, there's no cost for the weekend, except for your room and, of course, your flight or travel and a $75 fee for food. But that includes a lot of food. And just let me know by writing to me at bonkay@aol.com, or you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com and hit into the link for the healing weekend. Space is limited, so try to get in sooner than later. Okay, and without further ado, I will introduce my dear friend and also wonderful guest, Dr. Ira Gelman. Hi, Ira. Welcome back.
Hey, Bonnie. Glad to be here. Thank you.
I know that every time you do a show here, people give me such wonderful feedback that you're a guy who tells it as it is, that, you know, you're really you know, very straight up front with what you have to think and say. You've been in this field for many years. You have your doctorate in human sexuality. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So you studied this. You understand how it works. And you have also said to me that it's not quite black and white all of the time, that it is a little complicated. And especially today, we hear so many more things than when I was growing up. Now, when I was growing up, there were two things. You were either straight or gay. And there wasn't anything in between. It was just straight or gay. And we didn't know very much about gay because people were really hidden because of the persecution they would go through at that time. And so even if they were gay, they weren't going out and announcing it. Only in very rare occasions did I ever hear somebody admit they were gay. And when I moved to California for a few years when I was in my later teens, there it was much more open. But when I came back here, you know, I still didn't really see it very much. And it wasn't until the later years, until the 80s and 90s, that you heard much more about gay. But it was still basically straight and gay. Now we've evolved into this, you know, century and, you know, almost 20 years into it. And now there are all new kinds of terminology when it comes to sexuality that you really have to work hard to keep up with because it just seems to be changing and people are adding in different kinds of terminologies and definitions. So now I think it's harder to really understand it, so maybe you can help us a little bit with that tonight.
I'll do my best.
Thank you. I went to the dictionary from Lesbian and Gay Glossary of Terms, and this is from the gay community itself. So there's some terms that we may not be familiar with, but I'll tell you what their explanation is. So let's start with this particular one, because I have a number of women who live in these marriages whose husbands tell them that they are, quote, asexual. Now, according to this glossary, it means the lack of sexual attraction or desire for other people. That's what their definition of asexual is. And would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that, it's not what that means besides not having a sexual attraction is the person has, like, no sex drive, meaning they don't have fantasies about sex, they don't masturbate, they don't... It's different than celibacy. Someone who has taken a vow of celibacy, let's say for religious reasons, they have a sex drive, but they've made a choice for whatever reason to not act on it. Someone who's asexual, they have absolutely no sex drive. So if it's a woman, and let's say she's in a marriage, she just won't be a energetic partner. You know, it doesn't mean she won't have sex, because asexuality does not mean fear of sex. That's something that is different. An asexual person was not traumatized. They're not suffering any type of PTSD. They just, for whatever reason, and a lot of it could be hormonal, don't have a sex drive. If it's a man, it doesn't mean that he can't pleasure a woman, let's say, manually or orally, but his ability to, let's say, have an erection is going to be non-existent if he's truly asexual, because there's nothing that really is turning him on.
So these men who claim that they're asexual, that some of the women in our group have husbands who claim this, but they're looking at gay porn, would that kind of negate that?
Well, before you were saying everybody, body appreciates that I'm a straight shooter here. Of course it negates it. It's a total contradiction. You cannot be or identify as asexual and then look at gay porn or porn of any matter, gay or straight. But if the guy is trying to use the term asexual to explain to his wife why he's not interested in sex, and he's truly asexual, gay porn is not on his radar screen. It isn't that he's curious. It's all bullcrap. He is using that term to fool his wife. So ladies out there, if any of your men are telling you that they're asexual, but yet they still have sexual desires for men, they are not asexual at all, in the least. Not even a tiny bit.
And that doesn't necessarily mean desires. That also means just looking at porno for sexual stimulation, correct?
Yeah, the only time someone asexual would look at porn is more of a test because maybe they don't want to be asexual. And they want to be in a relationship that involves sexual contact. So they may try to look at porn to stimulate themselves to see if something does spark, but if they're a heterosexual male, they would be looking at heterosexual porn and not gay porn. Heterosexual men do not have fantasies about other men. They could admire another man's build. They could wish they were well endowed like another man if there's like heterosexual porn, but a straight man, I'm going to say 99.9% of the time, is not fantasizing about having sex with other men or is interested in watching men have sex with each other.
So for a man who claims to be asexual living in these marriages, explaining why he's not having sex with his wife, the fact that he's even looking at gay porno should make her highly suspicious that something's really wrong. And
you're understating it. Not suspicious. The guy is lying. It's not a suspicion. A suspicion is where there could be maybe an element of truth or so. This there is a total lie. I don't mind shades of gray when there are, but this is not a shade of gray. In this case, it is one or the other. You cannot be asexual and then be interested in looking at any type of porn. So if that's what the man is telling his wife, then unfortunately, he's just living a lie that is adding to her confusion.
And I think the part that I would really wonder, if somebody's truly asexual, why would he even want to be married? He's not going to be having a family, most likely, because he's not having sexual relations with his wife.
Well, I mean, it depends on how old he is. You know, today's world, you know, the average age of getting married is rising like every year for men and women. But going back for a lot of the women you're talking about that probably been married for 10, 20 years, that was not the case. People got married when they were younger, and having a family was something that you just thought it was something you were supposed to do, and your parents may have put pressure on you about having, you know, children. So someone who's asexual doesn't mean they can't ever, you know, feel sexual. You know, it could only be maybe like a couple of times a year. Not to mention, I mean, Viagra today doesn't exactly cause desire because it's a physiological pill that a man would take to increase blood flow. But it's something where if there was a tiny bit of a spark of a sexual desire and then the guy took some Viagra once in a while, like maybe, you know, when a woman is in her fertile part of her cycle, he might be able, you know, to achieve an erection, have sex with her. You know, but it happens, you know, once in a while.
Well, in these cases, it doesn't happen at all. You know, after the first year or two of marriage, when it happened very occasionally at best, infrequently, maybe once every couple months, and then the story becomes asexual, and then it's never again. But there's still gay porn on the computer, so that's the kind of ones I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, that's 100% of a lie now. The person is living a lie. They're not being honest. And some of these guys may actually be lying to them. They could be. Some of them could be lying to themselves. You know, if they're self-hating, you know, everybody needs to think, no matter what your issue is, if someone has a self-hating issue, it could be about their body image. It could be about their religion. It could be about their race. It could be about their ethnicity. In this case, it could be sexual orientation. That type of self-hatred takes over a person much of their waking time. So they could be just in a supermarket, you know, looking at, you know, what oranges to get or, you know, what package of chicken to get. And if they're self-hating, they're still going to be, like, under a shadow. And if someone happens to look their direction, they're automatically going to internalize that as, you know, the person, you know, is judging me and is thinking nasty about me. So going back, you know, 10, 20, especially 30 years ago, a lot of men figured getting married to a woman and trying to have a kid was something that I'm supposed to do. And if they didn't accept their own sexuality, they may have, you know, been in denial and spent years trying to deny who they were.
I reckon I tell you another big story that comes out to a lot of the women. And let me get your feedback on this since we're on the subject of porno. There are a number of women who catch their husbands looking at gay porno. This is the story they're told. And it's amazing how they are told the same story. But this is what they're told. That they're concerned, the men claim they're looking at it only because they're comparing penis size. You know, that they have concerns over their body image and they want to see what other guys look like. But they have absolutely no interest in men whatsoever. Do you think that's a valid reason to be looking at gay porno?
You know, just a few days ago, I was digging in my backyard, and I think I struck oil. Does anybody want to invest in my oil field? if that is the line that is being used, that's another ridiculous. Let me ask the communities out there listening to this, male, female, gay, straight. The market for gay men or heterosexual men in the porn world with having a really small penis is very low. I mean, there is a market, you know, for maybe two or three people. But if somebody is concerned about his penis size, 99% of the people making, the guys making, you know, porn are going to be very well endowed. So what, if anything, they're going to now feel even more inadequate looking at that. So that type of reasoning.
They claim they do feel more inadequate, and that's why they can't have sex.
Okay, but yet they still keep looking at something that's going to make them feel more inadequate. Like, that really makes sense?
I don't know. That's the excuse they use.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just these are people who have not come, you know, to love themselves, and they can't be honest with themselves. So if a person, ladies, if a guy can't be honest with himself, how is he going to be honest with you? Not a lot of these guys, and I think some of the women have this issue where the guy is a really good man. And he's probably, you know, a good provider and is good in many ways, and that's fine. But if he feels self-hatred towards who he is as a sexual being, he's not going to be able to be honest with you when he can't even be honest to himself, his own family. He's living a lie.
I'd like to ask you this as a straight man, that maybe this would shed some insight to our women. As a straight man, I say in general, men want sex. I just feel that by nature, almost all men want sex, straight or gay. But the thing is that if you're living in a relationship with somebody and you've only been married a couple of years, and all of a sudden the sex stops in your marriage, I always say that men don't stop wanting sex. They may stop wanting sex with you, but that doesn't mean they're not having it somewhere else. Because I think that by nature, man is a sexual person. And so
yeah, I agree with
that. I tell women, you know, if you're only married a couple of years and your husband's lost that sexual feeling towards you, I mean, some men try to say, well, once you're married, it's not like before you were married, or stop acting so ridiculous, or you want sex all the time. You know, they make it degrading for the woman. But I think that sexuality, especially when you're younger, in your 20s, your 30s, even the 40s, is something that's very natural that comes in a relationship, especially in a marriage. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. So you're looking at, like, the guy that was...
Because... Yeah, like, do men talk about wanting sex because they have pressure at work? I mean, that's the excuse some of them use.
No, I mean, look, that part of it, if they had a healthy sex life before, like, I'm willing to bet that the vast majority of women who are married to gay men, their sexual contact was minimal at best. It wouldn't even surprise me if the guy tried to give excuses to not have sex until they were married, you know, hoping then it would be like, you know, I already got her locked in. But if they had a healthy sex life and then he stops wanting sex, there's probably other things going on then. I don't think that means that he's gay, because someone who was gay that was leading a double life would not be having a lot of sex with a woman to begin with. You know, one of the things, you know, so can as a man, you got to remember too, as men get older, the body does change. You know, when you're a young guy, like in high school, maybe late middle school, and a girl, especially a pretty girl, says just hello to you, the guy already has an erection. As you get older, then, you know, it needs more work. And by the time a guy could be like in his mid to late 40s, the body may not be responding in the way he wants to. And that type of nervousness could actually cause him, you know, to avoid having sex because he's not the stud that he once was. But that's totally different, you know, a scenario than a man who's gay that, you know, is married heterosexually. And don't forget that meds, especially medications that are used for antidepressants, can very much ruin a guy's sex drive. You got to remember, ladies, you know, men are brought up to be, you know, we have to solve everything. So if the man suddenly is not having sex with you, there could be a chance that he is on antidepressants and now he's too embarrassed to tell you. And don't forget about diabetes.
Not if they find gay porn on their computer, though, right?
Right, that's a whole different story. But then I still would say that guy was probably never very sexual with his wife, like, because you were saying the scenario where the guy was sexual with his wife many times and then suddenly stopped.
Well, I think in your 20s, though, you know, you can have sex. It doesn't necessarily mean it's what you really want. But I think in your 20s, like, any touch kind of feels good. You know, in your 30s, you can convince yourself that it's okay because you're having an orgasm, you know, you're getting an erection. But then so many of the men that I work with who are gay men, they all pretty much have the same story, that they're able to have sex with their wives. They love their wives. I guess that emotional need takes over. But there's a time when all of a sudden biology overtakes the emotions. And no matter how much they love them, it's not happening. So
yeah, no, that makes
that
sense. Yeah. Okay, you know, all right. The way you explained it, yeah.
One woman just wrote in as we're talking, doctor, she said, Gellum. My husband says that he went with a man so it wouldn't be cheating on me. I feel so disgusted. Do straight men do that to their wives?
No. Unfortunately, he's just using that as an excuse to try to minimize the the damage, you know, that or the embarrassment of getting caught.
Although, to be honest with you, there's a number of men who have told our women that the reason they turn to a man is because the wife doesn't want to have oral sex with him. But I think that's ridiculous, because if that were the case and he wanted it that badly, he would go to another woman, not to a man. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, totally. He'd either find somebody or go to a prostitute. He's not going to, you know, turn to a man to, you know, have oral sex with.
Right, because I think that the average straight man would never want to have that or think about that, you know, from my experience.
Yeah,
all right, so
no,
here's some other terminology now from the dictionary, going back to that. We have bisexuality, who's a person emotionally, romantically, or sexually attracted to more than one sex, gender, or gender identity, though not necessarily simultaneously in the same way to the same degree. So I think a lot of men use the bisexuality terminology because they don't feel comfortable saying gay. And I have a number of men who tell me that they have a wonderful marriage, but they have a sexual attraction to men. So they feel because they're married to a woman, but they're sexually attracted to a man, that makes them bisexual. And I try to explain that makes them not bisexual. Bisexual would mean that you'd want to have sex with your wife as well. I mean, that's how I feel. Do you feel that way, too, or not?
Yeah. I mean, the way you described it was, yeah, that's pretty cut and dry. If the man loves his wife, you know, people keep changing definitions in order maybe to justify what they want to believe in. A lot of this gets to be a bunch of gobbledygook, at best to a whole bunch of horse crap, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. So people need to stop making definitions to try to intellectualize something that they're trying to justify intellectually here. I mean, it's ridiculous. So if a guy is in love with his wife, partner-wise, that's fantastic. But if he's interested sexually in the same gender, he's not bisexual. So stop, you know, people need to stop, you know, using bisexual that way. And if that's the new definition, then I'll never use that word again, because that's just like an incorrect definition. Or it's one that's trying to justify, you know, somebody cheating on his wife, you know, with the same gender, and yet still say, oh, I'm, you know, I still love my wife.
Right, because if you're truly bisexual, using the word bisexual to their terminology, you could be maybe emotionally or romantically or sexually attracted to someone, but if you have a wife, then you would stay with your wife because you should be equally attracted to her. So that's what I tell these men. I said, if you have to go outside your marriage to have sex with a man, then you're not what I call bisexual. I mean, it's that simple. You've crossed over the line.
Yeah.
I call it the penis line.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Now, there's another terminology. I don't know if you're familiar with this. My nephew taught me this one. It's cisgender. Did you ever hear that term before?
Yeah, that's
CIS.
Yeah, that one's been around for, you know, a while.
I never knew I was a cisgender, a term used to describe a person whose gender identity aligns with those typically associated with the sex assigned to them. So if I feel like a woman and I'm in a woman's body, that's my cisgender.
Yeah, I think that whoever came up with that term is simply trying to act as if 99% of the population, their sexual gender or their gender identity matches the genitalia. It's only a very, very small percentage of the population. It's like, you know, maybe a third of a percent. So if I said 99.7% of the population's gender identity aligns with their genitalia, that would be pretty accurate. So for the point, you know, 3% of the population that want to use that term, you know, cis male, cis female, they're just trying to act as if someone whose sexual, or I should say gender identity that matches their genitalia isn't as common as it is. You know, they're trying
more, to... I believe, with transgenders, right, when they're saying, well, here's your choice, you're either a transgender or a cisgender. Cisgender means you're a female, female, male, male. It has nothing to do with your sexuality. It has to do with your gender assignment, right?
That's my understanding of it, yes.
Okay. Then they have gay, of course, a person who's romantically, romantically, or sexually attracted to members of the same gender. Well, I agree with them on that. Now, this one's really kind of different. I've heard this one recently. Gender dysphoria. Clinically significant distress caused when a person's assigned birth gender is not the same as one which they identify. According to the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the term, which replaces gender identity disorder, is intended to better characterize the experiences of affected children, adolescents, and adults. That's called gender dysphoria.
Correct.
Okay, now we have gender
expansive. Now, with gender dysphoria, you can think of, depending on thinking back, well, I don't even want to say when we were kids, but, like, if you have kids that have friends when they were, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, there definitely are cases where hormonally, pre-hormonally, it could have been there's something known as the testosterone wash of the brain that happens during pregnancy and then also within like the first year or so after delivery, where some kids, like some boys, are just born very feminine. Where they, as they get older, I mean, they identify with women. And there are some women, you know, that are or that are born maybe with an awful lot of testosterone that, you know, you could characterize of having a lot of traditional masculine traits. So if somebody, you know, has that type of hormonal imbalance or either the absence or too much of that testosterone brainwash, they, yeah, that term is legitimate. That's like in the DSM, which is what psychologists use. That is, you know, a person who does not feel that their genitalia matches the gender that they feel they belong to. So you're talking, you know, in something like maybe a third of a percent of the population, you know, might feel that.
Third of which population?
The human population.
One-third of it?
No, one-third of 1%.
One-third of 1%. Okay, I feel better now. But the thing is that when we talk about gender dysphoria, and I guess that's applied similar to transgender, am I correct? The issue of transgender.
Yeah, I mean, I think somebody who is against their gender would have a desire to change it to, you know, the emotional, you know, to the emotions that they feel they belong to. So they would become trans, correct?
Do you have any idea, would this be nature over nurture? Would it be like you said, when you were being born, you had certain testosterone going in your system or not, or does it happen?
Yeah, I think much of it, is nature. But unfortunately, you know, I don't know if I've brought this up in past shows or not, but the political, it really gets me sick how very intelligent people don't do things in a logical way and they allow emotions to take over. For example, if someone has a desire or is gender dysphoric and has a desire to become a transgendered person, they need to process that with a therapist, with a psychologist that specializes in trans reassignment. Not just suddenly say, well, I feel like I'm a girl or I feel like I'm a boy, and then go to their doctor and start getting hormonal treatment. That is not acceptable. Because people go through traumas, and I know of several cases that involved biological females that did become trans men, that all these three people I'm thinking of had went through traumatic experiences that possibly could have led them to hate their femaleness. So in these three cases that I'm thinking of, I don't think there was a hormonal or biological issue. I believe that it was a psychological issue coming out. And very interesting, just I'm going to say like maybe 2 months ago, I think her name is, she's a medical doctor, Lisa Lippman. She came out with this fantastic research. She's affiliated, I believe, with Brown University, that spoke about sudden gender dysphoria in prepubescent children. And she found that there was this hysteria that typically, and most of these people I think she studied were female, that it kind of became like a clicky thing where they would find other people who felt like them and were saying suddenly, oh, we hate being girls, let's just be boys, and it became like an us versus them against the world. And to explore, is there something psychological going on, was looked on as inappropriate. And then her research, Brown took down from their website and was criticizing not her issues about could there be a psychological issue for becoming trans, but they were now condemning her research which was what a slap in the face. I read her research. It was excellent. Plus, she had to also go through an approval process to get posted in the first place. So here you have an Ivy League university that, because it's not maybe PC, has totally, like, taking away somebody's work, whitewashing it, condemning it, I should say, and I doubt, you know, if she may even get tenure there, because I don't believe she's tenured, all because of a segment of the population who can't accept that maybe they have an issue that's psychological and we just shouldn't fix with, you know, a testosterone injection every other week.
I read a report from, Harvard University, from the head, I believe, of the psychiatric department there, who claimed that it's not a physical thing, that it's more of a mental thing, like feminized gay men who now become transgender. But they're gay men who feel that they were feminized, like the one you were talking about earlier. But not that there's something that's, you know, born or inherent in that, that it's something that is just developed. It's not like this is something that you can treat. I mean, it is something you can treat, but it's something that, before, like you said, before you run and get the hormone shots and everything else, look at all the other issues that are surrounding this. Because he didn't believe it was a physiological kind of problem. It's more of a psychological issue.
Yeah, that needs to be explored. And unfortunately, in today's climate, especially when you're dealing with, you know, like a 14-year-old that now wants to just start taking hormones, and everybody thinks that, wow, this is a great thing. You know, no, it's not a great thing. The person needs to talk to somebody and process over a several-year period to try and see what is the basis of their desire to change their gender, not just suddenly, oh, I feel like changing today, so wow, this is great, let me go to my doctor tomorrow and get, you know, hormonal replacement. No, you need to talk to a psychologist that has specialized in this and has a lot of experience before you start with the meds.
I know, and I think their lives are really very sad, you know, in many cases, because, you know, you're caught in between two worlds.
Well, look at their social group. That was another thing that Lisa Lippman's research had shown, is that, you know, I'll give an example. You know, when it comes to mental health, it's really a fascinating field. There's issues where, take someone who's hospitalized, and not all treatments, not all hospitals are the same.
Uh-huh.
So you could take, let's say, a girl with an eating disorder, and this is the example that's been brought to my attention recently, that is now being hospitalized for, let's say, anorexia. And in hospitalization, there now is like a social group where there could be a contest on who is the most anorexic out of the group, on who could hide it the most, on who could manipulate the parents and the doctors the most. So here you think your kid is getting help, when in reality, in the social group they're with, they're actually learning how to be a better anorexia. And I know for a lot of the audience listening to this, they're probably shaking their head saying, you know, is this guy serious? Yeah, I am serious.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to the whole, you know, hysteria about, you know, gender this and gender that, when a person isolates themselves and they surround themselves with other people, I should say, that only think that there's something wrong with their gender, their hysteria just adds fuel to the fire for them to want to, you know, change. Like, you know, I feel like getting my ear pierced today, you know, so in this case, I feel like, you know, changing my gender today. So sometimes it could be physical. Other times it could be just something that is a psychological issue that happens.
Under transgender, they say an umbrella term for people whose gender identity and or expression is different from cultural expectations based on the sex they were assigned with at birth. Being transgender does not imply any specific sexual orientation. Therefore, transgender people may identify as straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, etc.
That just sounds a whole bunch confusing to me. I mean, the Dr. Gelman definition here would just say someone is transgender, they just feel the opposite of the gender that their genitalia they were born with.
Let me ask you this. If somebody is truly trans, I'm not sure, you know, like I say, where the line goes between transgender, transsexual, but I think the transsexual is more sexual reassignment of sexual organs, whereas transgender, you can still live with the same organs that you have, you know, especially for men who become women who keep their, you know, penises. Why would you, if you were had a female identity, why would you want to keep your penis?
You know, that's a good question. I don't have any easy answers for that. It could be because the penis is the instrument of sexual pleasure, and if the penis is removed, well, the ability to have an orgasm is going to be greatly diminished to maybe non-existent.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if it has to do about, you know, not wanting to give up sexual pleasure. I don't know if it's a fetish that, you know, possibly the person could feel, you know, like in the community they belong to, that's like a turn on for certain people. There's not any one reason I have for that. But I do believe that somebody who is a true trans, a male to female, is not going to want to have her penis. You know, is going to want to have a vagina, is going to want to fit in a locker room and a bathroom and not have to be concerned about being outed because of having a penis.
Here, I'm looking under transgender rights. It says a person... person may be considered to be transgendered if their gender identity is inconsistent or not culturally associated with the sex they're assigned with at birth. They may have or may intend to establish a new gender status that accords with their gender identity. Transsexual is generally considered the subset of transgender, but some transsexual people reject being labeled as transgender. Globally, most legal jurisdictions recognize the two traditional gender identities and social roles, man and woman, but tend to exclude any other gender identities and expressions. I said there are many legal issues and aspects of transgenderism. Most of these issues are generally concerned as part of family law. I guess the thing I just, like I said, I don't understand, and I have a nephew who is proudly transgender, and I'm proud of him just for being my nephew because he's really wonderful. But I never quite get a clear-cut definition on that. And I would just be thinking, if you want a female identity, you want to have, you know, you go for hormonal treatments, you lose the hair on your face, you grow buff, you know, and you dress like a woman, you talk like a woman, you change your names to a woman, you wear fingernails and makeup like a woman, why wouldn't you want to be all woman? That's, I guess, the point that I don't understand.
Maybe because in those cases, they're like 99.9% sure they want to be a woman, but then there's that tiny bit that is like, what if I'm wrong?
And then I asked him also, I've discussed this with you, what kind of men would go with somebody who's transgender? And of course, his response to me at first immediately was, I said, do gay men go for you? And he would say, no, not at all. He said, I look like a woman. I have breasts like a woman. A gay man's not interested in that. So I said, okay, well, that would make sense, but what kind of man is interested in that? And he said, well, it's straight men that come to me. So again, I said to him, look, let's go over this one more time. You may look like a woman, you may dress like a woman, you may have makeup like a woman, you have breasts like a woman, but when you have a penis, you're not a woman. So that men who are coming to you, who want you, you have to. It can't be a straight man, because a straight man wouldn't want a penis. So he said there's a terminology of trans-attracted, I guess that's what they call it. But I'm thinking, maybe is it like a fetish, or do you think it's just gay and it feels better because you think you're with a woman and you can just negate the fact that you're gay?
You know, to me it sounds more like it's a fetish because, yeah, a gay man is not going to want to be with a man that has breasts. You know, and that acts like a woman. He's not going to want that. He's going to want to have an attractive. He's going to want to have an attractive looking man. I mean, in the gay community, you know, you do have the more feminine type of gay man that maybe more. how do I say it, like I think a lot of us have stereotypes that gay men have to behave like feminine, you know, and all like Broadway and all sing and all act. And I think that's like an overgeneralization. So, those stereotypes exist, but, you know, we can't say all gay men are like that. So you might have, you know, and it's like with women, with gay women, you may have one woman who is more of the feminine role, and you have one woman that is more of a masculine role. It could be the same thing in a gay relationship. But most gay men that I have known would not be interested in a male that was becoming a trans female, you know, with a penis. They wouldn't find that. Just like a lesbian is not going to want to stay with her partner in many cases if her partner is now becoming a trans male.
Uh-huh.
You know, she wants to be in a relationship with a lesbian, not with a male. Because a lot of trans males now, you know, it's much more difficult to build a penis that is working. So a lot of women who become a transsexual male, they don't have bottom surgery because it doesn't work as well. It is nowhere near perfected.
So you don't think like Bruce Jenner had that kind of surgery?
I have no clue. I really don't. To be honest with you, the whole thing with Bruce Jenner, I really didn't follow it all. I thought it was more like a freak show that was just, you know, the way it was being publicized. So I have no idea. You know, you'd have to ask Bruce Jenner.
I think it's interesting with Bruce Jenner is that he did become, you know, a female identity. I'm not sure if he had the surgery or not. I've heard different stories on that. But what's interesting is that he goes with a woman. You know, he's not interested in men. So I always find that interesting. I think that most men who switch over, you know, who want to become a woman, they want to go with men, but he wants to still go with women. So it's just a little confusing.
Yeah, see, I mean, I do remember Bruce Jenner back in the day, and to me, he always appeared to be feminine. I know he was a decathlon champion. Okay, so what? You know, you could be, you know, you could have a gay man that, you know, is a professional football player, just like you could have a man that, you know, is you know, has his own gender dysphoria. That's like, you know, a track and field guy, whatever.
I had a man who was a kung fu teacher, right?
Excuse me?
I used to have a husband. My gay husband was a kung fu teacher, so go figure. You
yeah,
know,
but then again, he probably used, I think in his case, the kung fu and the martial arts was to try to come across like he was macho.
It was.
That's why, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he did it to become macho. Plus, you know, is a cover. So in Bruce Jenner's case, I think hormonally he was always, you know, to me, I think hormonally he just was very feminine.
But getting back to the transgenders, though, once again, you think that the men who go for transgenders, that's maybe a fetish, but that doesn't mean they're. Do you think they're still straight? They have a wife, and that's who they're going with.
Although yeah, I mean, if
really
they're not
matters,
having, if that's the only type of sexual relationship they're having with a penis that's not theirs, I would say it's a fetish. Maybe it's a fetish because they, in their minds, they're telling themselves that they're not really gay. But we know that most gay men are not going to want to be, you know, with a trans woman that still has a penis. So to me, it sounds very much like a fetish. But, you know,
okay,
it's like
so
such, I don't even, I don't know any studies on that. Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to study.
So let's go back to sexual fetishes. So there's lots of different kinds of sexual fetishes, you know, lots of them. And the thing that is, let's say that you have somebody who has a fetish with a transgender man who now a woman, but still has his organs on him. So even if it's a fetish, can you change that fetish? I mean, psychologically, do people have success in changing their fetishes?
Well,
from what you read,
a lot of times in treatment, the goal, you really can't help what you think about or what turns you on. You could intellectualize it as much as you want. You know what you like, it's what you like. So the approach typically used is you're not guilty for what you do, for what you think about. You're guilty about what you do. It's like someone who's an alcoholic. Uh-huh. They're always going to want to drink alcohol.
Uh-huh.
So if you buy into the disease model, which I do, you're not uh-huh. guilty for having a disease of alcoholism, but you are guilty if you act out on it. Like just recently, my younger daughter is in college, and she made a comment to me about the guy that wrote Alice in Wonderland.
Uh-huh.
That from his lifestyle, you know, there's a decent chance that he may have been a pedophile in hiding. You know, Alice was was the daughter. She had, I think, two sisters. You're talking like, you know, she was like 11 years old, and they were daughters of someone that he worked with. He actually was a mathematician, and he used a pen name to not, like, lose legitimacy as an academic. And he was into photography. This is the 1800s, but you still had photography. He was interested in photographing nude young girls. It's not known if he thought he was going to marry, because actually up until about a decade or two ago, there were some states that you could be as young as 12 years old and get married, as long as you had a parent give permission.
Right.
So it's not known if he was thinking of marrying Alice, but my point is, even though it looks like he had an inclinations of sexual nature and emotional nature towards prepubescent kids, it's not believed that he ever acted out on it. So going back to somebody with a fetish, I don't think you can really change it. It's a matter of the person not allowing it to control themselves and just keeping it as like a fantasy in your mind instead of living it out in real life.
I guess, but you know, to be honest with you, I have an issue with people who have fantasies about sex with children. And you know, I had a situation happen a few years ago where I was friendly with a social worker, and she had a second marriage, and she had madly in love with this guy, telling me how wonderful he was because her first husband was really abusive and physically abusive, too. And she had two boys from that marriage and didn't last, of course. She got out of it. So now she met this wonderful guy, and she gets married. So he's so involved with the kids' activities and Boy Scouts and this, and he became a scout leader and a baseball coach. And then one day she comes and she finds him looking at child porno. And she, like, freaks out. You know, these are, like, boys that are under 12.
Right.
And he said, listen, it's just a fantasy. He said, I would never act on it. And she went with him to a psychologist. And the psychologist said to her, there are those people who just have fantasies and those people who act on the fantasies. And from what I'm hearing from him, he's just having a fantasy. So that, to me, would have been enough to say tootsie goodbye. I'm not staying with a man who's fantasizing about young boys. But
no,
I
agree with you,
think...
because in this guy's case, first off, he shouldn't have been accessing pornography of, you know, that's actually, it's not even porn anymore. You know, it's now illegal.
Uh-huh.
Porn is legal. What he was accessing.
What happened, actually, is that, you know, a few months, you know, like, I didn't hear from her after I had the conversation with her, telling her I think this is dangerous, that, you know, he shouldn't be running the Boy Scouts there, the Little League team, and she would say, well, I'm at the house and he does the Boy Scouts. I said, I don't care. You're opening up
the
world to him
that,
with 8, 9, and 10-year boys.
Yeah,
and
the fact
so,
that he set up his life where he is being, it's kind of like an alcoholic that is working, you know, in a liquor store, a state store, and
right.
is saying, well, you know, if you know there is a warning sign, then you don't put yourself in a situation that you're going to be tempted. So in this
right. it's just
guy's
like I tell
case,
people who have drug addictions that you don't go work in a hospital where you have all the medication in front of you. You know, pick a different field
yeah.
to work in, not something that's going to, you know, drive you right over the edge. And
yeah,
in this case,
so
what did happen, she didn't talk to me for a year after this conversation because I guess she felt offended by me, but I was really concerned. And I said to her, you know, you're a social worker. You know, you're not looking outside the box. You're looking inside. She says, well, you know, do I break up a marriage over this if he's not going to act on it? And I said, yes, you do. But anyway, she didn't like my answers. And a year later, she called me. She says, I'm really sorry that I didn't talk to you, but I was very upset by what you said to me. But my marriage is over. And I said, well, what happened? She says, well, you were right. You know, he used my kids as bait for some other kid and fondled him and, you know, became a whole horrifying thing. So I think that when you're dealing, when it comes to children, that people who are right-minded are not doing that. And that's a sickness.
No, but Bonnie, it is, you know, if someone does have that attraction, looking at porn is out of the question. But if you're asking the question, are they ever going to lose the desire for the attraction to kids, the answer is unfortunately, in many cases, no.
Right. I agree with you 100%.
And the thing, you know, that we stress is that you're not guilty for what you think about, but if you know that it's wrong, illegal, then, of course, you just don't do it and you have to structure your life where you're not ever around little kids or alone with little kids and certainly, you know, become a coach because now you're trying to help out, but come on now, you're not trying to help out. There's that hidden reason of why you're doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the way it is. But,
so it's going,
you
know,
I don't think there's any cure for that either from everything I've read.
No, the word cure in this case would be the absence of acting on it. That would be the success.
Uh-huh.
Is not doing anything that's going to endanger your family or anyone else's child or family. That would be the definition. Yeah, cured, no. But abstaining from the action, that is what would be the success.
And that success is hard to find. I will say that because I know that people take all kinds of medication, all kinds of drugs to lower their desire for sexuality, but somehow, you know, they're not happy not having that desire either and screw up with the medication. I guess the bottom line from the show tonight is that if there's anything in your marriage that's just not quite right, you need to address it and not look for ways to explain it away or look for excuses to understand because the problems never go away. They just intensify and they get worse. Would you agree with that, Ira?
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, it's easy to, like, or intellectualize something because now you don't really, you know, you're justifying it almost, you're making an excuse for it. And this is not easy stuff, especially, you know, once you have kids that are involved and you've built a life with somebody, it's very understandable about the reluctance to want to do something to rock the boat. But unfortunately, you know, things will reach a point where they'll be out of your control and more damage can be done. But to talk with someone professionally who knows what they're talking about is of crucial importance to try to get your bearings straight. Because I think a lot of people, when they discover that they're married to someone or involved with someone that has like a secret life behind them, it's like shocking. And they're looking for an excuse to justify that behavior, and then they start to believe it, and then they're down, you know, a path of denial. And that's not going to lead to anywhere, you know, that's not going to have a happy ending.
And much of this is also tuned in with our time together with also with personality disorders. So when you come back next time in the near future, I hope that you'll be willing to discuss that a little bit and how they all interact together. Ira, I can't thank you enough for being a guest on the show. You always teach us so much. Most of all, you teach us how to stand up for ourselves, and I think that's the important thing. So,
my pleasure.
We're actually out of time. You're always so in time with you, just goes so fast. To all our listeners first, and to you, Ira, I want to wish all of our Jewish listeners and friends a very happy Hanukkah. And
yeah, you
this is
too,
a time
Bonnie.
Of miracles. Thank you, Ira. All kinds of miracles can happen during Hanukkah, right? And it is a holiday of miracles, and hopefully we'll have some peace on this earth. That would be a real miracle. But in the meantime, enjoy the holidays, and we'll be back next week with the Straight Wives Talk Show. Ira, I love you. And
oh,
I'll
love
be talking
you too,
to
bye.
You soon.
Talk soon.
All right,
all
take
right,
care.
Thanks.
Good night to all our
okay.
listeners. Right.
All
bye-bye.
Right. Okay, bye, everybody.